Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Brad Kellner. You can always be a part of the show. Hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. BK is at Brad Kellner, and Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01. A lot of excitement right now on the 40 acres because there is talk that Texas may be zeroing in on a defensive coordinator for the Steve Sarkisian staff. That would be the current co-DC, or at least he was the co-DC. Pete Carrot Kwiatkowski, or Coach K, is that they want to call him? I've heard Chad says he's going to call him Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I don't know.
Chad's going to be the only person in the entire world giving him the Polish pronunciation.
That's what he says.
Save
he
that
wants
crap
to do it.
For the Eastern Hemisphere, bro. It's different over here. I don't know. Someone sent me this, and guys, I spent more time today trying to find out the pronunciation of this guy's name than I did actually researching his accolades and his resume and why he deserves to be the defensive coordinator here at UT. And I could not find, like, one consistent pronunciation. I was looking for videos on YouTube, or he would say his name, or somebody else would say his name, and I couldn't find it in any of the press conferences that were online. But somebody did send me the pronunciation guide from the University of Washington roster this past season.
That's where it would be.
And we're going with Kwiatkowski.
Kwiatkowski.
That's Kwiatkowski. What is phonetically written down on the UW roster. So Q-U-I-T, like the word quits, cow, ski.
Is that what Chad said, Rod?
Pete Kwiatkowski.
No, he says something else.
He threw in like eight more syllables in there.
That's what they say, phonetic spellings. At this, we should ask him exactly what it is. Because I've heard Kwiatkowski too. I've heard Kwiatkowski. Kwiatkowski. I've heard a lot of stuff.
It can't be Kwiatkowski, right?
I have no idea.
All right. Well, I think we'll go with the Washington media guide there. I am excited about this guy. There's nothing quiet about his defenses. They're aggressive, and he had some really good players, really at all three levels, too. If you look at Greg Gaines, Vita Vea, how they were able to really get pressure and also be good against the run with the defensive line. But the linebackers they've had, I'm excited about this hire. I'm not gonna be fanboy and say this is the perfect staff ever. And there's still tons of questions. We'll see how it meshes together, how it works. I've talked about Terry Joseph and how I feel about that. And Rod and I have kind of talked about Andre Coleman. We're not overly fired up about that. But I am fired up about this. This is a good hire. This guy is a really well thought of defensive mind, Rod. And I think Texas fans, I mean, heck, this was the biggest fish we knew that was Sark, whoever the DC was going to be, that was going to arguably be the biggest hire. And for all the college football people, and BK brought it up, for Washington fans that are really upset to lose him, he's a very well-respected name. This is a good get for Texas.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. I thought the Washington defense did a really good job of being progressive. It's probably about as cutting edge and innovative as any defense in the country has been since he and Peterson got there. And of course, Jimmy Lake became a big part of that holy trinity there at Washington to the point where he is now the head coach. And once he became the co-DC, I believe in 2016, he was also basically the passing game coordinator and the secondaries coach. And he and Coach K, or Kwiatkowski, they really built one of the best defenses in college football, and it was really, really impressive the way they were malleable. They would defend all of those, you know, spread offenses in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 culture fits the ecosystem of the Big 12. The Big 12 has better coaches, and I think better personnel overall than the Pac-12 does. But I do think culturally they're all about pace and space and spreading the football out as much as possible, and that shows that he can adapt to a spread passing game, and there will be a ton of those hybrid spreads that he's going to have to adjust to in the Big 12. But I'm confident that he is a problem solver, and I always say the number one thing I want to see in a coach is their ability to solve problems. And Washington did that over and over again, whether it was based on the personnel that they had available to them, because they didn't get, you know, the best of the best best, and they didn't get prototypical, prototypical athletes at every position, but they were able to adapt their scheme to and their philosophy to certain skill sets and certain position types that they got there at Washington, and also a lot of versatility, on that defense too, something they prioritized, and Jimmy Lake was a big fan of. So I know there's some concern with how much of it was Jimmy Lake, how much of it was Coach K. I think it was both. I think both those guys did a really, really good job as co-DC. And I know at one point Jimmy Lake became the play caller in 2018, and he just got the play calling duties back as co-DC in 2020 when Jimmy Lake got the head coaching job. But either way, there has been, I think, equal burden and responsibility for both those guys on that defense. So I think it's a great hire for Coach K. It's going to be a challenge for him to get to know the other coaches he's going to inherit, because, you know, usually coaches, they want to bring in their own guys, but that shouldn't be that much of a factor in terms of hindering their ability to gel and form a cohesive unit. So I like the hire a lot. I'm a big fan of Washington's defense, always have been. I can't wait to see what he cooks up here at Texas. I'm not sure if it's going to be the 2-4-5. A lot of people saying, oh, man, he's going to bring that 2-4-5. Yes, there will be some packages of the 2-4-5, I'm sure of it, but you also have to adapt and adjust the scheme to the talent. And Texas talent this year is mostly in that defensive line, you know, so I wonder if they will try to feature more of that. So maybe you will see a 3-3-5 stack just initially until they can bring in specific athletes to run the defense that he ideally wants to run. But I still like it, because he's, like I say, he's a problem solver. He's going to come in and solve the problems that Texas has schematically. And but as a recruiter, I'm not sure if he's considered an ace recruiter or a good recruiter or a great recruiter. But you don't need every coach to be a great recruiter. Some coaches you got to bring in to help you get a schematic advantage, guys who are all about developing talent. And on his resume, he's got a ton of that. My favorite stat, though, about him is he's been there, D.C., co-DC, since 2014. Washington has only allowed a team to score 35 points or more 5 times. 3 of those came in 2014 in this first year. So in the Big 12, you know, if you can keep teams from scoring points, that's what it's all about in the end. And Washington had one of the better scoring defenses in the country for the last 6-7 years.
Yeah, and to add to kind of developing guys, but also the versatility, the guys that I really liked, well, one, Marcus Peters was there in 2015, but Buda Baker, who was a safety. Remember how we were laughing how Buda Baker didn't have an interception, but PFF had him as like the top ranked safety this year. And I said, that's essentially, he was a linebacker at Washington, and they were able to use him against the run. Also, they blitzed him a lot. They were able to do a lot of cool things. Azeem Victor, who's a linebacker there, Taylor Rapp, who is a safety. I mentioned Gaines and Vea, but especially those kind of linebacker safety hybrids, BK, he really was able to play around with that versatility.
Yeah, the thought of DeMarvion Overshown.
That's exactly who I'm thinking of.
Learning from a guy like Coach Kwiatkowski is pretty exciting to me. And yeah, he's done a phenomenal job at Washington. And look, I don't want to take any unnecessary shots at Jimmy Lake. I think he's a great young coach in this profession. But oddly enough, Washington's worst year defensively in the 6 years that Coach K was there was 2018, when Jimmy Lake took over as the defensive play caller. Like, they were better every other year besides that one. So I don't know if that's an indictment on Jimmy Lake or anything like that, but, you know, if you're looking at 2018 and saying, oh, well, just a couple of years ago that defense wasn't all that good, well, that was actually the 1 year where Jimmy Lake was calling the plays on defense and Coach K was not calling the plays on defense like he was the previous few years.
He called
years.
Him 2018 and 19, though.
20, okay, well, they, I mean, 19 yeah, was he, worse he, than he, they were in
yeah, 2018, 19,
15, 16, and 17. So yeah. Once Jimmy Lake took over, it wasn't like a drastic drop-off. They were still a really, really good defense, but statistically speaking, they weren't as good as when Coach K was calling the defense up there. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's going to translate down here to Austin, but potentially something to look at there. And, man, this is an aggressive defense, right? I mean, when Steve Sarkisian took this job in his introductory press conference, he talked about wanting to be aggressive in all three phases of the game. I think we expect the Texas offense, with Steve Sarkisian coordinating and calling the plays, I think we expect that to be pretty aggressive and pretty innovative. I mean, we all saw that on display in the national championship game last Monday night. And we really have seen that from Alabama the last couple of years. I don't think there are too many doubts that this offense is going to be more aggressive under Steve Sarkisian. But how can you actually bring in an aggressive defensive coordinator, right? A guy who's actually going to help complement the offense. And I think just the track record that Kwiatkowski has of forcing turnovers and also making big splash plays. I mean, Washington was pretty highly ranked in the country, KD, in terms of sacks and tackles for a loss most of the years that Kwiatkowski was there as the defensive coordinator. Like, those type of plays that can flip the field and get the football back to your offense, I think that's something Steve Sarkisian was looking for. And I think, based on what I've seen and watching Washington's defense the last few years, that's something that Texas is going to get.
Yeah, and it's needed in the Big 12, where you're not going to stop people all the time or anywhere near all the time. And so you're going to have to be able to make some splash plays. And that's what they do. They strip, and not like you like, BK. But they are an aggressive, attacking, physical defense, and they really played with a chip, especially going back to when he was calling plays. There was just a certain chip, and you never know how much of that is that OKG I was talking about and our kind of guy, the type of guys they're recruiting. I'm sure they're going to take some of that philosophy here and just try and elevate it with more elevated talent, but that's always kind of a tricky thing. He's been mainly up in the upper West Coast and in the Northwest, and he's just done a really good job. I mean, people across the country really think a lot of this guy. Getting back to Rod's question about how good of a recruiter he is, I haven't heard anything on that. I haven't heard he's an awful recruiter, but that's kind of where Sark is going to have to combine this staff, and hopefully he did it right. We'll have to wait and see. Only time will tell if he got enough recruiters and enough guys that can really coach it up, because we've certainly had a problem of the latter, Rod, at Texas for too long now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I do think if he brings that, of course, he brings that resume, but if the product on the field shows that defense is an effective defense and you can create splash plays, we know that it's now about situational defense. You don't just have a suffocating defense, even though they've done a really good job of that in the last few years there at Washington. In the Big 12, I think it'll be a higher level of offense. I mean, it's been the premier offensive league in college football. So I do think it'll be a step up in terms of the challenge. I do think he's up to the challenge, but you're right. It's about splash plays. It'll be about third down defense and red zone defense, and it'll be about whether they can take the ball away. Those are the things that are valued in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Your total defense and, you know, yeah, scoring defense, of course, always matters. How many points you're giving up, no doubt about that. But, you know, there are a lot of things that in the Big 12, we have to kind of change our definition of what a good defense was in the Big 12, because Longhorn fans, like a lot of Big 12 fans, started to realize that the old definition of defense didn't apply in these very prolific, high-octane leagues like the Big 12. So with you know, Coach K, I'm sure we'll readjust our expectations about what he's going up against, because, you know, Baylor's got a new play caller in Jeff Grimes, who had an historically great offense at BYU this year. Actually, if it wasn't for Bama's offense and how historically great it was, actually BYU's offense would have set records too this year. They just had a bad year because Alabama was better, but both were record-breaking historic offense in terms of their efficiency. You got Jeff Grimes, of course. Lincoln Riley is well-respected as one of the best offensive minds in all of football at any level. Matt Campbell is not too shabby of an offensive mind. He does really good things there at Iowa State, and it's a different hybrid spread scheme, if you will, with the tight end usage they bring out there. And the air raids coming back to the Big 12 a little bit with Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham now calling plays for different programs. So it's, yeah, it'll be a different challenge, and he's actually got a good record up against air raid offenses, at least the Mike Leach air raid, which, by the way, is it's probably the most pure of all the air raids. I guess as pure air raid as it gets in Mike Leach. I mean, he brags about winning games with zero rushing yards or negative rushing yards. I mean, that's just how extreme he is. But these now refined, evolved air raids, like Lincoln Riley's version of the air raid, and the ones that we've seen here in the Big 12, they present a different type of challenge because there's more balance to them. They're more moderate than the extreme air raids. But either way, he's still got a good track record against Mike Leach's air raid, so at least he's got some experience to build a foundation of a game plan against Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, Rodby. I think you brought it up, just the development that he was able to have at Washington. I mean, produced 9 first- or second-round draft picks since 2015, which was the first draft after he took over. 9 first- and second-round picks in that 5-year span. Meanwhile, Texas had 0 throughout that stretch, guys. And you know Texas has been recruiting better than the University of Washington over the last few years. So is a testament to the type of development that that they've been able to do defensively up there. And the year Washington made the playoff in 2016, they lost to Alabama in the first round. Of course, everybody loses to Alabama in the college football playoff, it seems like. They only gave up 24 points in that game.
Yeah,
they lost 24-7.
That was a Browning offense issue.
And their other loss that year was to Sam Darnold and USC, and they only gave up 26 points in that game. So, like, Washington was really, really good, and Chris Peterson, the head coach, deserves a lot of credit, and he got a lot of credit for turning things around up there. And he's a phenomenal head coach and one of the better head coaches of this generation. But, like, when Washington did slip up over the last few years, it was generally because their offense wasn't good enough to go up against the big dogs. Defensively, they've been really, really good. Now, I agree with Rod 100%. It's an upgrade in class and talent and coaching minds coming from the Pac-12 to the Big 12. But, man, it seems like more often than not, whenever Washington had to play out-of-conference teams, their defense was able to step up and perform pretty well.
Yeah, no, they were. I mean, I really, really liked their defenses. And so once I saw the name attached to that, and so we've talked about it, there's that question of, okay, how much of it's Lake? How much of it is Kwiatkowski? And I think Coach K deserves a lot of love for that. So does Lake, but once I saw that they were getting that guy, it's the type of defense Sark mentioned that he wants, and it's the type of defense that if you get really good talent, and that 2016 team would have had Gaines and Vea and Baker and Victor and maybe even a Kevin King, not sure if Murphy would have been there, but they had all three levels. They had some pretty good talent, and he was able to release them. I'm not worried about any two down alignments. I think Rod's exactly right. I think he's going to be versatile. He's going to play around his talent. And at the end of the day, that is the sign of a really damn good coach. Can you see what your personnel is year to year and work around it? Rod, it's the exact same thing that Sark did on offense going from Tua to Mac Jones.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. That's why I'm confident. He's a problem solver, and that's why they've had one of the best defenses in college football since 2014. And yes, it's gone through different iterations, right? It hasn't looked the exact same every year, but they've been able to produce high level talent the NFL wants, and also able to produce a really good product. Top 10 scoring defenses consistently, or at least top 15 scoring defenses consistently. So I'm with you. They went and plucked a product from one of the best defensive think tanks in all of college football, and I really like that. And it shows you that, you know, Sark has a vision. He knows what he wants for the complement, his offensive football philosophy. He knows what type of defense he covets, and it's an attacking style defense. It's an innovative, progressive defense. It's malleable. It's multiple. So I like it right now. We'll see if all the pieces that he's brought in separately, because he's hired assistant coaches and he's going to hire the coordinator, of course, too. And that's unusual, but at least it shows you that he's got a vision and he's trying to execute it. Speaking of having a vision and executing it, if you got a vision for where you want to live, you got a vision for maybe you want to upgrade your living situation, maximize your prime asset, right now may be the perfect time to do it. A lot of people moving to Austin. That's always good news. People moving to Austin, it means more people are buying homes, which means property values are on the rise. Now, here's why that's good news for you, because currently the demand is outpacing supply. That means it's the perfect time for you to maximize the value of your home. Whether you're looking to sell now or later, you can instantly see what your home is worth right now at opendoor.com/myoffer. You can even get a competitive cash offer on your home within days, showing hundreds of thousands of Americans who have already requested an offer on their home. Go to opendoor.com/myoffer to see if your home qualifies for a competitive cash offer. You can instantly see what your home is worth, and if you like the offer, you can sell directly to opendoor.com. No prep work or showings are required. Actually, me and my fiance were very curious. We visited opendoor.com/myoffer with no intention on selling. We just wanted to know what our home was worth, but we were really impressed by the offer from opendoor.com. It was more than fair. So fair, in fact, yeah, she started looking for homes in our price range. But Opendoor allows you to sell your home by skipping all the hard parts. Offer eligibility varies from case to case, so don't wait. Start to sell of your home today at opendoor.com/myoffer, or just learn the current value of your home right now at opendoor.com/myoffer. Today.
Supply and demand, big in real estate, can also affect food. You know, there's definitely been, the population has definitely gone up. We know that. But there's been questions about, is there going to be enough meat? Is there going to be enough food as we go on? Something's happening in Singapore that may solve that.
I like that five-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one-and-done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One-and-done time. Anyone that knows me knows I love to talk sports, and I love to talk about food. I usually talk about sports during this segment. I thought I'd go ahead and change it up here a little bit, and because this food story to me was really intriguing. So we go to Singapore for this, and pretty interesting stuff. I mean, obviously, I think most people are just concerned about population and all over the world, so it can be different. I mean, do people have enough to eat, right? And are things sustainable? So, and also, are animals being treated properly before they're actually killed to be eaten? Those are all questions I think a lot of people have. And in Singapore, they are now growing chicken meat in labs. And so I saw this story a couple weeks ago, but it's finally hit a restaurant in Singapore. So it's high quality meats created directly from animal cells, and it is apparently safe for human consumption. This could really change a lot of things. Now, the company that created this is known for plant-based alternatives to egg products. I'll get into that a little bit because Taco Bell, BK, I knew I could get your interest once I saw this. Taco Bell is actually changing the menu a little bit. So we'll get to some of the plant-based stuff. But this stuff is really incredible that the scientists came together, and chicken meat's going to be sold as nuggets. I see a little picture of it right here. The prices are way too damn high. But this is amazing that they're actually, you know, engineering that stuff now and making it to where it is tasty enough and safe enough to be able to be eaten. So the safety and quality validations were demonstrated that harvested cultured chicken met the standards of poultry meat. And in fact, in some instances, it was actually a little bit better. So it's extremely low and significantly cleaner biological content than conventional chicken. The analysis also demonstrated that cultured chicken contains a high protein content. So you're going to get your protein, diversified amino acid composition, and highly relative content in healthy monounsaturated fats. So it's a rich source of minerals. I'm really curious to see what it tastes like, but guys, we're heading to a new direction. Maybe no surprise that it's Singapore, but this is actually going to be hitting restaurants in Singapore, and it's going to be heading to America pretty soon.
Is it real chicken?
It's real chicken. Hmm. So it is real chicken. Here's a good way
but
to put it.
But it's just created in a lab?
It's like processed chicken.
It's
then,
processed
right?
chicken, and they're taking it from cells of a real chicken. So,
like cell phones, iPhones, Android.
No.
I don't want no Android chicken. If it's an iPhone cell, I'll eat it.
You're not gonna get any of that. So, the idea is obviously to make it sustainable, but also for some people that maybe, you know, I mean, obviously there's some chicken that you eat, you can have issues with that, right? And depending on where you're at in the world, Rod, there's a lot of people that have to eat and they're really putting their body in serious danger by eating whatever poultry they have available.
Yeah. No, that's that's phenomenal too, because you're talking about being able to potentially not solve world hunger, but definitely put a real dent in it if you were able to kind of produce that. And of course, the carbon footprint of usually having to, you know, deal with farm animals and of course the production of all of the different types of meat, but I'm sure that it's, and I don't know for a fact, I'm sure it's more, you know, green.
It is.
Energy efficient. Yeah.
Yeah. And, no, and I'm so glad you brought that up because it should help lower methane gas emissions. And that's one of the things that one of the reasons why they were really curious about doing it. Should also reduce the destruction of woodlands for the creation of grazing pastures. Yep. There's a lot of different things that go into it. And just to have that availability is nice. In terms of some numbers, though, you know, meat consumption is set to grow by more than 70% within the next 30 years. So,
really?
Yeah, wow. There have been calls for the availability of meat alternatives friendly to the environment. Also, as I mentioned earlier, friendly to the animal welfare. But also, you know, we're very lucky here in America. There's people all over the world that are just trying to find something to eat. And looking at the prices at this right now, it's premium prices in terms of chicken. So I think it may be tough for them. But the fact that we're actually heading down that road's a good thing.
Man, I mean, living in Austin, it just feels like meat consumption is going down by 70%.
Yeah.
All of the vegans and vegetarians I come across in this town. So help me out with this because I'm not a big science guy, right? Bill Nye and I don't get along very well.
You know, you're not a big Bill Nye guy?
No, I mean, I'm just not a big science guy.
Okay.
Know? I think he does good work. I just don't understand what the hell he's talking about. He's speaking a foreign language. Might as well be coming from Singapore, honestly. But I think they speak a lot of English over there in Singapore, don't they?
Yeah.
Anyways, so what's the, so does this, you get more meat out of each chicken with this? This just allows for more chicken?
Well,
this...
you don't have to kill a chicken. So what they're doing
is... We're not worried about overpopulation of chickens at this point?
I don't think we are. So the main thing to understand is that it's created in laboratories via the process of extracting cells from the tissues of living animals and then growing them artificially via a special cultivation technique.
So you're getting chicken meat without killing the chickens.
Without killing the chicken. So you end up pulling cells and then cultivating that. Let's say raising that. Cultivating that. And the picture that I see right here of the little chicken nugget, I mean, God, it looks like chicken. I know they always say the joke is it tastes like chicken, but it looks like chicken.
I like chicken the way it is, man.
I love chicken.
I do too, but I mean, as Rod brought up,
it's cheaper, man.
It's cheaper, but they're selling it for more.
No. As Rod brought up, in terms of some of the other things like carbon footprint, I mean, there are other things that play into this just outside of we obviously love real chicken. I love real chicken, and that's why I would love to have a taste test on this to see, okay, how close is to it. You know, is it to it? But Rod, if they're taking cells from the chicken and the chicken I'm looking at here, if they got it to the point where they could actually cultivate it and get it big enough, you would think that it's going to taste like chicken because it came from chicken.
And it'll get better, I'm sure.
Yes.
This process will become more refined, so I'm sure they'll perfect the process and it'll become better tasting. Right now, they're just worried about getting some substance of protein potentially developed, and that way they could feed a lot of people who may need it for cheap. And like you said, they also could end up saving a lot of different forest area that they would usually they deforest different areas just so they could create farmland so that they could cultivate all these products. So I agree. If you can do it and you can do it for cheap, and you also can do it in a more green, environmentally friendly way, I think it's a good thing.
It is. So it started, PK, for one nugget, it was $50 U.S. dollars.
$50 for one chicken nugget?
To manufacture it.
Well, dude, you know how many you can get at McDonald's for that price?
I know. And that's just to manufacture it. So that's out of what you pay for. I don't know what the uptick would be on that. But they've been able to lower that cost significantly. And as I'm saying, this is just the very beginning. So like most things, the very beginning, it's going to be really expensive. And then hopefully we're going to see some other actual edible meat. So pretty interesting stuff. And
is this going to be beyond chicken? Like, is the goal for this experiment to be able to do this with beef
cows
and pigs and all that too?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So, I mean, just having that available.
So what do you think? Like a serious question. I guess neither of you guys are vegetarian or vegan.
No.
Would this pass for them if it's just the cells? Like you're not eating dead chicken, but you're eating like kind of chicken. Is this acceptable for those people to eat?
It's a great question because a lot of the vegetarians and vegans I know, I respect the hell out of why they're doing it. And they're doing it because of cruelty to animals, right? Now, so if an animal doesn't have to die, are we going to go that far to say that extracting cells
did they sign their consent waiver?
I don't know. I mean, we're really going to...
If they're under 18 years old, did their parent or legal guardian sign the consent waiver?
We're going to test this theory or maybe take it to a crazy spot, because I understand the vegans and vegetarians. And like I said, I it's very admirable. I couldn't do it. I love meat too much. I wrestle with that. I don't wrestle with it every day, but I think about it from time to time, and it's like, well, those two things don't line up, but it is what it is. This would maybe give other people the opportunity to do that and not worry about it. Now, I mentioned Taco Bell earlier because I know you are a huge fan of Taco Bell. They've been offering meatless menu options, and they're going to try some new plant-based protein options. So I don't know if you've seen that yet. Chipotle also had unveiled the cilantro lime cauliflower rice, and they're kind of maybe looking at some plant-based stuff.
What did you
too.
Call it?
Cauliflower rice.
Oh, no, the name of the restaurant.
Chipotle.
Okay.
Okay.
I heard a Chipotle.
Oh, man. Chipotle, whatever.
Give me a Chipotle, man.
And they've had their own issues.
It's authentic Mexican food.
They've had their own issues. They don't need to worry about how
Alec Baldwin's wife running the show over there. It's as authentic as it gets, dude.
How I'm pronouncing it. But for guys like you that hit this stuff up a lot, I would think they're barking up the wrong tree.
You know, it's interesting because a few years ago, Taco Bell unveiled, they've actually done this a number of times, like unveiled dietary options, like healthier options for people who like the taste of fast food type of items but also don't want to consume all of the fat and calories and sodium that goes into eating Taco Bell. And I didn't think it would work at all, but apparently like it did really, really well. And
that's surprising.
There were stories of people like losing a ton of weight eating Taco Bell, which sounds like an article from The Onion, but apparently it was a real, real thing. So maybe they will get some sort of response. I mean, the vast majority of people who eat a Taco Bell are like me, who are eating it because it's really, really bad for you and tastes incredible because of all the nastiness that's in there. But yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated, like you said, you know, curious to see where this thing goes and how long it takes before that will be an option at restaurants here in the States. An affordable option, right? I mean, not to the point where you're paying $50 for one chicken.
And it's
got
to taste good.
To where it's something that, yeah, like it's good enough to be on menus and it's also affordable and accessible enough to be like an everyday type of thing over here.
Rod, they got a long way to go because they got to make it taste good. They got to make it affordable for all of us. Have you delved into the plant-based stuff at all?
No, but it's, you know, all these things are worth it because if you can, like you said, make it taste good and you can learn how to make it for cheap or perfect the process. I mean, just the chicken thing. I mean, chicken consumption, think about how many stores that have involved chicken in this country in the last 2 or 3 years. Everybody's got some new chicken product coming out. Chicken consumption, I believe, has grown in the last 30 years by like 70%. This is a great chicken stat. I mean, I know we're just talking about other types of kind of processed foods as well, but it started out talking about chicken. Right now, if you look at it, there are so many – like basically birds and like farming animals right now, chickens account for 23 billion of the 30 billion land animals living on farms.
Wow.
So there are 30 billion land animals living on farms today in the world. 23 billion of those account for chickens. Dude, that's crazy.
That really is.
Wow.
That's crazy. So I'm saying people love chicken, and chicken has become that popular. So I'm saying it's like it's an arms race to try to figure out how to get this process, this cheap chicken. And if we can do that, then you're going to win. You're going to make $1 billion.
Meat consumption growing by more than 70% within the next 30 years. And yeah, I mean, interesting, fascinating numbers on chicken there. I guess it's not too surprising if you really think about it. But Singapore is one of those places that, like, this isn't that fat little toad in North Korea, right, where he could, you know, all of a sudden he's saying, yeah, we're good with safety standards and all that. No, I mean, Singapore is, they're tight on a lot of stuff. I would think that if they approve this and they want to go widespread with the consumption of lab-grown meat, that obviously other people got to come in and check it out. But it does make me optimistic that this thing's going to go.
Little Rocket Man.
Little Rocket Man. That's who I'm talking
he
about.
Might be listening, man. Be careful with that.
Good. I hope he is. Stop treating your people like crap.
All right. Well, that was KD's last segment. maybe his last segment on this earth as
Let
well.
Let him rock it, man.
Unbelievable.
Hey, if I got to go out mocking that guy, then it is what
That's
it is.
That's a good way to go. Agreed.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it?
It is. Fascinating stuff on One and Done, the future of food. It's crazy to think about. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. We've got stats for everything. We got stats for chicken. We've got stats for the new defensive coordinator. We'll get back into the new DC hire at the top of the hour. But we've got Off the Record coming up. How to get fired from a job 1 month in. That's next.
DD Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain and comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Off the Record time here on the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn, I'm BK Brad Kellner. Appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Tuesday afternoon with us. In about 15 minutes, we'll get back into some Longhorn football. A couple of Texas players have reportedly entered the transfer portal. One that we've already told you about, but also another one as well who is popping up in the transfer portal. So we'll give you the latest there. Also, more conversation about the reported new defensive coordinator hire for Steve Sarkisian and Texas football. But we've got Off the Record right now, gentlemen. The tease for today's story, how to lose your job 1 month in. That's exactly what happened to New York Mets general manager Jared Porter. He was fired yesterday, a day after ESPN reported that he sent explicit, unsolicited texts and images to a female reporter in 2016 while working for the Chicago Cubs in their front office. Do you know anything about this, Katie?
Not with us anymore. Not with us anymore. No, I did not know anything about this. I was hoping that we were hiring people that, I don't know, acted like they were 13 or older.
Yeah. So here's some of the details for this story.
11-year-olds out there, I didn't mean to take a shot at you.
Ooh.
This isn't right for any age. It's flat out wrong.
I figured you were going bar and bat mitzvah year. Like once you hit that age, yes. You've matured enough to the point where you wouldn't do anything like this.
Right.
Sadly, there are some sickos in this world at all ages. And man, some of the details of this story are pretty disturbing. But the woman met Porter in an elevator at Yankee Stadium on June 26th, 2016. She said they talked briefly, and that was the only time they ever spoke in person, she told ESPN. They were talking about international baseball prospects. They exchanged business cards, and that was pretty much it. So the business card exchange means phone numbers were also exchanged during that elevator ride.
She's a reporter.
She's a reporter, a foreign reporter as well. So something to keep in mind as we kind of progress through some of the details of this story. But apparently Porter began texting her the afternoon they met, and before the day was over, same day they met, before that day ended, he had asked her three times to get a drink. The woman said she agreed to meet Porter because she thought he was volunteering himself as a source and expected that they would discuss baseball, right? A couple of front office people or a front office person and a reporter. You figured, all right, there could be no harm in that. Porter asked in a text if she had a boyfriend. The woman said at that time she believed he was simply being friendly as she did not think someone she barely knew would be so forward. That night, after she said she couldn't meet with him but would the next day, Porter sent an unsolicited selfie. And he said, like? Question mark.
Who
with his
does
picture.
That?
And she did not respond. So this is not like a graphic selfie yet. This is just a picture of the dude's face. But yeah, seems like a pretty weird bit.
But she had already seen him.
She had already seen him.
Was it a blind date deal or like you're meeting someone online, you go, well, here's what I look like.
Yeah, I wouldn't have
that
done it.
That does matter in
way.
Relationships.
But yeah, you're right. I don't know. It makes no sense. And she did not respond. She said, quote, if I had a better understanding, not just of the language, but the culture, I definitely would have realized sooner what was going on. Porter texted again the next day, according to the messages, and attempts by both to set up a meeting fell through. A few weeks later, he reached out to her again, inquiring as to her whereabouts, asking, why aren't we hanging out? Porter also asked, whether the woman remembered what he looked like and said, "You're so pretty. Do you have a boyfriend yet?" He sent another selfie and said, "It can be me."
Mm.
It gets worse. The woman responded with a text.
That's just bad game right there.
It really is. Like, yeah, at this point, it's obviously completely unprofessional and crossing the line because these are unsolicited. But also, come on, guy. That's the best you're going to come with. Anyways, the woman responded with text shorthand indicating laughter and added, "Let's meet." Porter asked her for a picture. In her home country, the woman said, "It's very common for friends of the opposite sex to send each other photos." So she didn't think much of it, right? Okay. Apparently, we don't have the exact country of origin from her, but we know she's foreign and English is not her first language. And obviously, she's not used to all the ways things work here in the States.
So there's definitely some lost in translation here, right?
And she's Asian, huh?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
I'm not trying to be.
Oh, I know you're not.
I'm talking about because we're trying to guess
right.
What country she's from. I'm going to say it's probably an Asian country just because she said she gets pictures from guys all the time. That's not a big deal in their country. So we know it's not a country that is Arabic or
true.
Has
a
huge Muslim background. So I'm just trying to do the math.
It's a good point. And if she's reporting on baseball, Asia would make some sense there, right?
Exactly.
So, but there's definitely some lost in translation stuff on this. But BK, I think it only adds to, I think the lost in translation part, like at some point early on in this could have stopped and it just would have been creepy. But it's almost like he revealed who he was and just how sick because it kept on being lost in translation.
Yeah, it kept going. So she sent him back a selfie, just a normal picture of herself. And Porter responded, "You're gorgeous. Want more of me?" And she said yes because she thought it would be awkward to say no. She didn't realize where it was going after that. Porter sent three pictures, including the first of several that would show a man lying in a bed with a bulge in his pants.
I've been there.
So fully clothed, what, in bed with a bulge in your pants?
Yeah. You're
sending pictures of that.
No, just the first part.
That's fair. The woman said she initially was confused, and Porter asked her if she liked the picture, and they kept going back and forth. But then once the woman realized the sexual nature of the bed picture and realized like what was going on and like, okay, this probably isn't right. And I don't think this guy really wants to talk baseball here. She resolved to cut off communication. Guys, from that point on, between July 19th and August 10th, so think about that, that's less than a month, right? Basically 3 weeks time, Porter would send 62 unanswered texts, including seven photos. And I mean, the pattern of unsolicited messages without response continued for weeks, and this guy just wouldn't stop. And then at one point, he sent her a picture of himself nude and fully erect.
Gotcha.
Yes. And he continued to ask her repeatedly, "Are you there? Are you mad at me? Where are you? Can we meet up? What's going on?" 62 times, and once again, there were sexually explicit images that were sent as well. So finally, you know, she responds. She's like, "This is extremely inappropriate, very offensive, and getting out of line. Can you please stop sending offensive photos or messages?" And Porter responded in a series of messages, "I'm sorry, I will stop. I really apologize. Please let me know if there's anything you need work-wise." He sent one more "I'm sorry" text the next day, and that was it. That was the last text that either of them sent to each other. Once again, this all happened back in 2016, but this ESPN article just dropped a couple of days ago, and then yesterday, after the article dropped, the New York Mets fired Jared Porter, who was just named their general manager in December, guys. I mean, this guy was on the job. He got hired on December 13th and was fired on January 19th. That's a hell of a run for a general manager, huh?
Yeah, it is. Can I give you guys...
It's like Brian Gaines from the Texans.
Exactly.
He didn't have any of these.
Yeah, I don't think we had any of these stories, though, with Brian Gaines.
Sorry, Brian Gaines.
So during his introductory news conference, Porter spoke about, quote, a cultural shift.
Ah, of course he did.
Specifically, adding good people to the organization and improving the organizational culture.
Ah, yes, he's a big culture guy.
Took a month.
He's a big culture guy. Yeah, it took a month.
Took a month.
For them to find out that this guy is not a great dude.
Yeah, and I tried to go through this, especially because of the lost in translation part, and thought, okay, well, once she said, hey, this is too far, then he stopped. But Rod, the 62 text, the pathetic text of if someone's not texting you back, you know, it shouldn't be up to them to have to say, hey, this is getting to a harassment level. There should be some self-awareness, especially for someone who has a job like he does.
Yeah, you have to know. Yeah, and I know it's tough for some guys because they lack that self-awareness to be able to go, yeah, I think I'm harassing this young lady. Or she tried to give me the hint and let me down nicely.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Without having to break my heart or to humiliate me or emasculate me, but I'm too stupid to get the hint. So I know there is some of that because guys are stubborn. And, yeah, sometimes all they can see is the, you know, they can't see the forest for the trees, if you will. But yeah, I do think for him, was it 60-something texts that were she was unresponsive via the text. Yeah, man, you got to just give it up. And, yeah, you can't be sending ladies unsolicited, and it's hard to say unsolicited because they were texting back and forth, but unless she tells you she wants a naked picture of you or she wants you sexting her stuff, don't do it. Don't just randomly think you so sexy that she's going to love a picture of you. Even if seems like she is amicable and and you guys are flirting back and forth, don't just randomly send her a junk shot. Don't do that. That's not romantic.
No.
Don't do it. Just unless she asks you straight out, can you send me a picture of your junk? Don't do it. Don't send it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Trust me, it's not worth it.
No,
it's
not romantic, and it's also harassment.
Right.
I mean,
it's harassment.
It's against the law.
But to Rod's point, too, what men think is sensual, women a lot of times don't.
Right, yeah, that too. And look, just don't do what Jared Porter did, number one. And also, there's about 4 billion men and 4 billion women in the world. Yeah, shouldn't get so caught up over one of them, man.
I know. I really want to see what she looks like. I mean, he's not, you know, he wouldn't win any beauty pageants for guys. So, you know, I can tell that he probably had, and especially with the texting, he has his own issues getting laid. But I want to see what she looks like.
Yeah, pathetic on Jared Porter's part. He has lost his job as the Mets general manager because of this story, and rightfully so, of course. We'll take your thoughts, 337-3776. It's the triple option with RBKD. There is Off the Record for a Tuesday. Let's get back into some Longhorn football. Mentioned it at the start of the segment. A couple of Longhorns have popped up in the transfer portal. We'll tell you who those guys are, and we'll talk a little bit more about this reported new defensive coordinator hire for Steve Sarkisian. That's next.